Friend, I have lost the way. The way leads on. Then I'll make here my place. The way leads on. I cannot find the way. The way leads on. Have you ever had a fragment of something get stuck in your mind's ear? A bit of song, a piece of poetry, a phrase from a book or essay or conversation? That happened to me with these lines from Edwin Meir's poem, The Way. It perfectly expresses a feeling I often have. I wish to stay right where I am, and I hear the call, the invitation to take the next step. Things don't always work out perfectly, and the way leads on. I can't take one more step. The way leads on. Sometimes it takes years of baby steps. The way leads on. Sometimes you don't get credit. The way leads on. And it's worth it. Sometimes it seems that nothing is accomplished. Is it really worth it? Yes, it is worth it. In our overcrowded world, it's easy to underestimate the significance of one. There are so many people who have so many gifts and skills. Who needs me? What can little old me do to make a difference? What can our small religious movement do to help heal our hurting world? But the truth is, there is only one you in all the world. You are the only you. You're the one who is here now. Nobody can do the things you are called and gifted to do. What are you going to do with that one wild and precious life you have? What risk are you taking? What stand are you making? What action calls to you? And how do you answer? As Reverend Channing, one of the founders of Unitarianism, said, "Each of us is meant to have a character all our own, to be what no other can exactly be and do what no other can exactly do. There is only one you. You're the only person with your exact heritage, your precise series of events in that pilgrimage of sufferings and events of life that has brought you to this moment. You're the only one with your personal convictions and skills, your appearance, your touch, your voice, your style, your surroundings, your sphere of influence. You are the only one." The poet says, "I am only one, but still I am one. I will not refuse to do the something that I can do." We think of artists, musicians, writers, Michelangelo, Frida Kahlo, Clara Schumann, scientists, inventors, explorers, and technological innovators, Marie Curie, Louis Latimer, Steve Jobs, and social reformers and just plain doers, Clara Barton, Wangari Maathai, Noam Chomsky. We think of Dasrath who? You might ask, right, not everyone who steps up makes it into the history books or wins Nobel Prizes. Dasrath Manji was a landless farmer in India. He spent over two decades chiseling away at a mountain with rudimentary tools in order to create a road for the community. Just some 50-odd years ago, Dajwath Manji turned a precarious 1-foot-wide passage into a 360-foot-long, 30-foot-wide road all by himself. He made the decision after his... Sorry, spider. Pause for a moment for the spider. All right, back to doing good deeds. He made the decision after his wife, who was attempting to cross that track over the mountain, fell and was injured, and her injuries got worse, and they weren't able to get her, to carry her to the hospital, because it took hours to go around the mountain, and she died, and he was angry, and he was grieving. With just his chisel, his hammer, and a shovel, he widened the track and made it accessible to bicycle and to motorcycle. When he first started, the other villagers mocked him. Over the years, over 20 years, the villagers started to help him, providing food and replacing his tools. Before Dajwath Manji, the hill, that vertical mountain, isolated all the region's villages, forcing people to trek through that dangerous terrain for hours just to reach the lands that they worked, or the medical services, or the markets, or school. Dajwath explained, "My love for my wife was the initial spark that ignited in me the desire to carve out a road. But what kept me working without fear or worry all those years was the desire to see the villagers, thousands of villagers, crossing the hill with ease whenever they wanted. Individual men and women do make a difference. One strong-willed and determined citizen says, 'I stand against this wrong,' and a community changes its direction." This is how it goes in the biblical story of Esther. In this story, the king's advisor, Haman, if we were in a Jewish context and I said that name, yes, boo, hiss. And the idea is to drown out the name so no one hears it anymore. So Haman, very good, has flattered King Ahasuerus and appealed to his greed, and he convinced the king, the distracted king, to write a law calling for the extermination of all the Jewish people. What terror this strikes in the hearts of the Jewish people. In those days, when an edict is set forth, it was final. Nobody could change this plan, certainly no Jew. Yet one individual could stand against this wrong. And on this occasion, that person is the king's very young, very new wife, Esther. Esther's uncle tells her of the problem and asks her to go into the king and make supplication to him and plead before him for her people. He may have known what he was asking of her. She certainly knew. There were huge risks. If Esther took action, she risked losing everything, including her life. Although the king was her husband, she couldn't just stroll into his office and say, "Hey, honey." Things didn't work that way in ancient Persia. He was in his throne room, a very formal place. And she didn't send for him, he sent for her. And that hadn't happened for over a month. If she were to go into him, into that throne room, uninvited, He could have her killed with the wave of his hand. Uncle Mordecai asked a great deal of Esther. What was Esther's answer? If I die, I die doing the right thing. She hears the call. She knows she's in a unique place in history and in that court. She has reached her own personal hour of decision, and she shows up. And here's my favorite part. She uses her head and her special skills. She plans her way. She invites the king to dinner and charms him. Then, when he's relaxed and happy with her, she states her case. And it works. Well, it mostly works. He can't reverse the law, or at least that's what he says, but he does give the Jewish people the right to defend themselves. And he removes that hateful advisor, Haman. So the story doesn't end perfectly. We end up with pages of bloodshed. But the most important thing did get accomplished, with thanks to Esther's unique position, particular skills, and willingness to show up. The American couple in the story this morning had a similar experience. Martha and Waitstill Sharp found themselves in the middle of an invitation to step up, and they did. And their marriage didn't survive. And the children they had left behind in the United States became estranged from them. It took a great toll on the family. Not without a price, but worth it. So what is your gift? Is it love and anger? Or American hubris? Or excellent skills as a hostess and a lot of courage? What are your hammer and chisel? Maybe the difference you will make is planting a tree, and maybe that tree will stop a car from driving into a house, or perhaps stop the hillside from sliding down. Or perhaps you'll touch just a few people with a smile or a kindness, a gift of your unique self. And they will make a difference for others in ways you can't predict. One morning, more than 100 years ago, on the island of Jamaica, a boy named Ethelred Brown had a crisis of faith. He was sitting in church and was being told about the Trinity, and he also knew about the oneness of God, only one God. And having recently taken math classes, it didn't add up. By luck, he happened upon a booklet by the Unitarian minister, William Ellery Channing, and after reading it and some other books, Ethelred decided that he was a Unitarian too. But there were no Unitarian churches in Jamaica, and so Ethelred knew he would have to find his own way. He held to his Unitarian faith as he got married and made a life for himself. At age 32, Ethelred heard the call to become a Unitarian minister and to start a Unitarian church in Jamaica. He didn't know any other Unitarians, but Ethelred Brown didn't let that stop him. He found his own way. He wrote a letter to any Unitarian minister in New York. And he put that in the mail. And he got a reply. The reply told him that he needed to go to a school in the United States to become a Unitarian minister. Now, Ethelred didn't have much money, so he had to ask for help. And he did. And he scraped together the money, and he got on a boat, and he went to the United States, and he went to school. And he spent the 2 years learning to become a minister, and he was ordained in 1912. He was the first Jamaican to go to that school. He was the first Black person to become a Unitarian minister. Yay, but the president of the Unitarian Association told Ethred he couldn't be at a church with white people. Because he was Black, he had to be at a church with Black people. Except there weren't any Unitarian churches with Black people. So basically the Unitarians didn't think he could be a minister. But that didn't stop Ethelred. He found a way. First he went back to Jamaica and started a Unitarian church there. And then after 8 years of successes and failures, learning and frustration, he decided to move to the United States and start a church there. And he and his family moved to New York City, and he founded the Harlem Community Church in 1920. It wasn't easy. They didn't have much money, and they didn't get much help from the Unitarians. His wife became sick, and one of his children died. Ethelred had to work long hours at a non-ministerial job that he hated. But somehow, Ethelred found a way, and for 35 years, that congregation existed. Hundreds of people found their way to Ethelred's Harlem church. They prayed together, they learned together, they worshiped together, they sang together. Reverend Ethelred Brown's ministry didn't result in a lasting congregation, so some might say his ministry failed. He despaired of making a meaningful life, but I disagree. His ministry made a difference for so many people, and it's still making a difference today. It touched the people he's directly spoke to or helped. It touched his classmates. It touched many members of our movement, fellow ministers. His story continues to affect people. Like me, today. Another Jamaican, Hope Johnson, heard the call to ministry, eventually served a different New York congregation where she mentored me. And Reverend Hope has served on the UU Ministers Association Board of Trustees. Things are different now. Ethelred's perseverance helped change our movement and our world, though he never realized it. The hymn that we're going to sing later today was written and named in honor of him. It's, "I'm on my way." In our overcrowded world, it's easy to underestimate the significance of one. It's easy to underestimate the value of you, your vote, your convictions, your determination to say, "I stand against this." It's tempting to give up, to say, "I'll make here my place," but the way leads on. What does it matter if I get involved or not? It matters greatly. It matters to your character. The word salvation, that word is made out of the word salve. Salve. That which creates healing from the woundedness we experience in life, our failings and all the harm that follows, these failures of our deepest aspirations for ourselves and the world, are resolved, are healed in how we choose to live, who we become through what we do. That is salvation by character. Healing, the great healing is in our hands. Reverend Channing preached salvation by character from every pulpit he visited. Who we are counts. What we do counts. It's true, somebody else might take care of that problem or this injustice, but when that happens, we are the losers. When we snooze through what should be our finest hour or stopper our ears in that moment when our gifts meet the needs of the world, that's tragic. The brokenness of the world cries out to us. There's work to do. We cannot respond to everything. However, nothing will change if we do nothing. So let me ask you again, what risk are you taking? What stand are you making? What calls to you? And how do you answer? Do you say with Esther, if I die doing the right thing? Don't worry what others may think. You don't answer to them. You answer to yourself and to your best principles. Only when we move from that safe harbor of theory to the risky world of reality do we actually make a difference. We can get stuck in theory, discussing what we stand for and what principles we embrace. Do our theories make the world a better place? They are of value, but they're not enough. Theory must be translated into action. Action. Unitarian Universalism is a movement, not a monument. We must take action in order to live up to our own principles, to live up to our own best selves. Things don't always work out perfectly, and the way leads on. I cannot find my way. The way leads on. Sometimes I get ridiculed. The way leads on. Sometimes I don't get credit. The way leads on. Sometimes it seems that nothing gets accomplished, yet it is worth it. The way calls to us. Come on. Does one person make a difference? Yes. I'm on my way to the freedom land. Come and go with me to the freedom land. We're on our way, great God, we're on our way.